Hello, everybody. This is Neil Ewers in Madison, Wisconsin, and this podcast is on the Zoom H4n recorder, a replacement for, or at least an upgrade to, the Zoom H4 recorder. It's a very nice recorder to hold in your hands, and unlike the H4, it has very easy-to-use buttons. And we'll get to that as we describe the unit. In fact, let's do that right now. Size in inches, 6.5 long, by 3.5 wide by 1.5 thick. Like the H4, the microphones are on one end of the recorder. So if you're holding the recorder so that you're looking at the display on the front, the microphones are on top. They point in toward each other at an XY angle of 90 degrees, but unlike the Zoom H4, these can be adjusted from 90 degrees to 120 degrees simply by twisting the microphones on their stem, sort of like they were screws. These mics are offset. One is above the other, such that if you have the recorder lying flat on the table with the display side up, the right-hand microphone is above the left-hand microphone by the width of the microphones themselves. So, rather than pointing directly at each other, they point past each other, but they are still at a 90-degree angle, both pointing 45 degrees to the right or left. And now, for the purposes of continuing to describe the unit, let's reorient the recorder so that the microphones are pointing up and the display and front panel of the recorder is pointing toward you. So on top of the recorder, you have two microphones. The microphone housing is, how do I describe this? If you go out to either side of the microphone and run your fingers down toward the bottom of the recorder, you will feel an indent where the microphone mounting plate stops. And there's a little indent, and then it comes back out again. So you can sort of put your fingers in there. One good thing about this, and I can't think of any bad things, it's just its shape, but it helps the windscreen be held on much more tightly than the case of the H4. So we have the microphone and the microphone housing. Now, right below the microphone housing on the front of the recorder, there's some writing. It probably says Zoom H4n, for goodness sakes, I wonder why. Right below that is a very large display, which is evidently quite easy to see. And right below that display, there are four buttons. They're sort of even with the surface of the recorder, and you press them in. And they serve two functions. They're either the track 1, 2, 3, and 4 buttons in 4-track, but we haven't gotten there yet. For our purposes at this point, they are shortcut keys that actually take you into the menus and do things without you having to go into the menus to do it. The first one is folder, the second one is file, the third one is speed, and the fourth one is record settings. Right below these buttons is a square of four buttons, which are your transport controls. The upper right is play pause, the upper left is stop, the lower right is forward wind, the lower left is reverse. You tap on the forward and reversed buttons to go to next or previous file. You hold them down to skim through the file. One thing I don't like about this recorder is that when you hold down the buttons to skim through a file, you hear nothing. You don't get any feedback about what you're going through. But that's just how it is, and I can't think of any way in the menus to change this. I don't think you can. To the right of the play pause button is a small round button that is, again, flush with the recorder so as not to be easily pressed, and that is the record button. Press it once to go into record standby. Press it again to go into record. When you're in record, pressing the play button pauses. Pressing the play button again causes the file to continue. Pressing the stop button stops the file. Pressing the record button while you're in record puts a mark in the file. These marks are seen by SoundForge and Studio Recorder, and interestingly enough, they are also seen by this recorder, such that when you are tapping the forward or reverse wind, it actually not only stops at the beginning of a file, but it stops at the marks as well. You can also create these marks in playback by pressing the record button wherever you want the mark to appear, and the same thing applies. To the left of this square of four buttons, there are three buttons in a column. The top one is pressed if you want internal microphone, and it comes defaulted to internal, and as long as you keep it that way, you don't have to press it. The second and third buttons change the signal to external microphone. And it really doesn't matter which you press. It seems that either one will do. One isn't one channel and one isn't the other, although that might be the case in 4-track, which I haven't gotten to yet. But pressing either of the bottom two buttons causes the internal mic to go off and the external mics to be on. I'm going to digress for a second because there is another microphone input on the back of the recorder at the very top, which is the plug-in power mini jack. You can turn on and off plug-in power. This is actually enabled when you press the top button. So if you press the top button and you are on internal mics and you plug something into this external jack on the back of the recorder, the internal mics go off and the external mic that you've plugged into the back of the recorder is now active. And that's all that's on the face of the unit. On the right-hand side, at the very top, there is a jog dial, which is a little different from the jog dial on the H4. The jog dial on the H4 was spring-loaded, and you pressed it and it sprung back, and you pressed it again and it sprung back. This one simply turns. It's click-stopped, but it doesn't spring back. You turn, 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 click, 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 and it goes from one menu to another. It's actually another way to go to different files when you're playing back. You can simply turn the jog wheel, and it goes from one file to another, backwards or forwards, depending on which way you're turning the wheel. And what's nice about the fact that the jog dial goes from one file to the next is that it avoids the marks that you put in the file. So if you want to arrow through the file and get not only from track to track, but pick up the marks in the file, you use the forward or rewind buttons. If you only want to go to next file or previous file and skip the marks, use the jog dial. Under the wheel is the menu button. Press it in and you go into the menus. You can press it in to back out of menus sequentially, or you can hold it in for 2 seconds and you're totally out of menus no matter where you were in the menus. And below the menu button is the record volume level, a rocker switch up for going up and down for going down, and the volume goes from 100 all the way down to 1. Actually, that's changed since I purchased the recorder, and I'll have more to say about that after I describe the recorder. Below the volume control is the SD card slot door. If you have the recorder lying flat so that the display is pointing up, the card door opens from top to bottom. You simply place your fingernail in a little slot, pull the little plastic door down, there's a hinge on it, it doesn't come off, and you insert the card by pushing it in until it clicks, and you remove the card by pushing in on it, it's spring-loaded, it clicks, pops out, you grab the end and pull it out and close the door. And that's all that's on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, at the very top, is a jack for a remote, which does not come with the recorder. It's a wired remote. Under that is the headphone jack. Below that is the volume to the output, a rocker switch as before, and I believe, again, there are 100 clicks, but I'm not sure. But you simply set it to where you want it and where you like it, and there it is. Below that is the USB connection, and below that is the power switch. And if you have an Olympus DS 30, 40, or 50 series, it's exactly the same kind of switch. It's spring-loaded, you pull down on it and release it, and the recorder turns on. To turn it off, you pull down and hold for a second or so, and if you've got headphones on, you can hear a small click when it goes off. If the recorder is on and you want to lock the buttons so they won't be pressed, simply push up on it. It clicks into place, and there you go. To unlock, simply pull down, but not hard enough to turn it off. And that's probably why they have the delay for off, because even if you pulled it down all the way, it probably wouldn't do anything unless you held it down for 2 seconds. And that's all that's on the left side of the recorder. On the back of the recorder at the very top, as I said, in the middle, is the mini jack for microphones with mini plugs, either powered or unpowered. Below that is a speaker. Yes, friends, we do have a speaker. Below that is the recessed screw hole for mounting it on a camera tripod, just like the Zoom H4, the Zoom H2, and the Sony PCMD50. And below that is the battery door. If you have the recorder lying on its face, with its microphones pointing away from you, there's a little finger hole over to the left of the recorder. You pull the finger notch to the right, and it opens up the battery panel. There's a ribbon inside the battery panel that helps you get the batteries out. There's also a switch inside the battery panel. When this button is to the right, it is on regular mode. When it's to the left, it's on something called stamina mode, which is a way to decrease what you can do with a recorder in order to increase battery life. Normal battery life, according to the manual, is 6 hours for two AA batteries. Stamina mode is supposedly 11 hours. Stamina mode will only record in 44.1 sampling rate, 16-bit. You also cannot use the limiter, and probably you can't do 4-track either, but I'm not sure about that. And that is all that's on the back of the recorder. By the way, when you slide the battery compartment open, it slides for a little ways, and then you can pick it up. It doesn't slide all the way. It slides open, and then it comes loose, and you can pick it up and take the batteries out, and you replace it the same way, just sort of right where it came out of. Press it just a little bit toward the left, and it clicks into place just as it was before. The bottom of the recorder looks just like the Zoom H4. Two combination XLR quarter-inch jacks, one on either side, and the AC adapter jack in the middle. Now let's talk about the changes they've made to the record-level volume control. Since I've purchased the recorder, they've come out with a firmware upgrade. One of the things the firmware upgrade did was add some steps below the lowest volume control on the recorder. So below number 1, there is 0.9, 0.8, 0.7, all the way down to 0.1. Now even at 1, the microphones are still on. In fact, even at 0.1, the microphones are still on. But the volume numbers below 1, the 0.9, the 0.8, 0.7, etc., decrease much more precipitously than do the numbers between 1 and 100. In fact, between 1 and 0.1, there is a 27 dB difference. There's something interesting, because when I first got this recorder, I wondered, given only 100 volume steps, what if you were using really high-powered microphones on volume 1? Could you distort? And yes, you could. You actually could overload the mic preamps even before the recorder registered 0 on the meters. Now, you can use very high output mics, go below 1 into the point range, and you can record as high an input sound as you like. In fact, if you remember, the bottom of the recorder has those combination jacks, XLR and quarter inch, and Tom found out, through no help of the manual, of course, that if you use the quarter inch jacks, they are 20 dB lower than the XLR jacks. So there's your 20 dB mic attenuation. So an interesting thing happens here. If you're on 1 and you're using the quarter inch inputs, you are basically recording at a nominal line-in signal, so that if you recorded something on this recorder in line-in at that level, it would be the same as if you recorded on most line-in stationary nominal jacks. But you can plug microphones into those connectors as well, and so you can record at line-in level with microphones, because you're still basically in the microphone preamplifier system. And given that it's a 27 dB difference between 1 and 0.1, and given that the XLR inputs are 20 dB higher than the quarter-inch inputs, you can actually record with microphones that use the XLR plugs, go down to maybe 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, something like that, and record with them at a line-in level, which means that you can record really loud sounds without being distorted. One note here, when I'm talking about really high-powered microphones and recording really low on the volume control, I'm talking about extremely loud sounds like jet airplanes and trains and stuff that you really can't record at a very high volume level at all. However, most of what we record every day is likely to be recorded way higher than that. For example, I'm currently on volume 60 from 1 to 100. So take what I said about high output mics and loud sounds with a grain of salt, which you only need to use if you're recording something that is just amazingly off the end of loudness. Now, I'm not going to go into menus in great depth, but I wanted to mention the folder structure here. If you press the shortcut key number 1, you are taken into the folder list, just as you would be if you did that in the menus. You're on, let's say, folder 1, which is what it defaults to. If you arrow up or down, if you arrow down, you get the folder 2. If you arrow up, you get the folder 10. Let's say you arrow down to folder 2, and you pressed enter. Now, you are back out of menus, and you're in folder 2. And one of the things I have done is to go into each of these folders, record the first file, saying simply, folder 1, go to the next folder, do folder 2, go to the next folder, do folder 3. That way, if you happen to get into a folder by accident, you know what folder you're in. But it also made me realize that you could do other things. You could organize the files you put on this recorder in a very nice way. For example, I have a lot of other tests I'm doing in addition to this podcast. They're in folder 1, but it's easy enough to get to folder 2. So that's where the files that I'm recording about this podcast are located. I simply had the first file recorded as folder 2 podcast. So you can organize your information that way much more easily than you can on a lot of other recorders because you have a very quick way of getting into folders. By the way, when you turn off the recorder, turn it back on again, you're in the same folder you were in when you turned off the recorder last. The same is true with the file shortcut key. If you press the second shortcut key, which is the file shortcut key, you're on a list of files and you can arrow through them. But you happen to be on the file you were just playing. Let's assume you've pressed stop before you did that. So you press enter, or press the jog dial in, and now you're in the file menu as you would be if you had gone into it from the menus. If you arrow up once and press enter, you're on delete all files in the folder. You're on no, so you arrow up once and press enter. But let's say you wanted to simply erase the file you were on. So you press number 2 shortcut key button, you press enter to select the file you're on, you arrow up 2 to delete file, press enter, arrow up 1 to yes, press enter, and it's gone. Very nice. What else is nice is that when you turn off the recorder and you turn it back on again and press play, the file that's played is the last file you either recorded or played when you had the recorder on previously. The third shortcut key, or button, is the speed button. Press this, and you can use the jog wheel to arrow up and down from 50% faster and 50% slower than normal speed. Tap the menu key to get out. The fourth button is the record mode button, where you can set your sampling rate and your bit rate. 44.1 16-bit is the default. You can also do 48 sampling rate at 16 or 24-bit. You can also do 96 sampling rate at 16-bit and 24-bit. MP3 goes from 48 all the way up to 320, and you can also do VBR. And now it's time to listen to different microphones on this recorder. The first test is between the Zoom H4 and the Zoom H4N. I no longer have a Zoom H4, so the recording you're about to hear was made when I still had one, and I was comparing it with the Sony PCMD50, so you'll hear me talking about that. That's, however, not what we're doing now. We're comparing the two recorders I just mentioned. So let me play you a short snip from the Zoom H4 file, and then the Zoom H4N, both using internal microphones, and see what you think the difference is. And this is the Zoom H4 recorder in the bedroom. Just to listen to the difference between these microphones, this is obviously just with speech, but this microphone is much more natural than the Sony, but that doesn't really matter because I think the Sony is going to be great for what I want to use it for, and that is speech. And this is the Zoom H4N in the same room. I'm in the bedroom because somebody's using the studio. It's a bit echoey, but pretty quiet. So since it was the same room I was in before, I figured I'd use the same acoustic setting. So this is the Zoom H4N in the bedroom, and let's see how this compares with the Zoom H4. And now before we go any further, let's do some comparisons of the internal mics of several recorders. I'm going to start with a recording of the Eddyrill R09. Then I'm going to go back to the Zoom H4N recorder, and then to the Sony PCMD50 recorder. This will be just speech, so it isn't going to be a really good idea of the frequency response of these mics, but we'll get there at some point. First, a speech test between the three above-mentioned recorders. First, the Eddyroll. And this is the Eddyroll recorder, the Eddyroll R09HR. I have full bass on. There is more bass in this microphone than there is in the Zoom H4N, so let me roll some of the bass off so that they're more similar. That's what I've done. The bass has been rolled off. These microphones are omnidirectional, and they're so close to each other that there isn't a lot of stereo separation. I'll be curious to see what you think of the difference in the sound of the mics, just with speech, and the difference in the noise of the mic preamps. This is the Eddyroll, and now let's go back to the Zoom H4N. And this is the Zoom H4N recorder. These mics are cardioid and much more directional. And again, I'll be interested in what you think of the sound of the mics and the noise. Some of the sections of this podcast have been made here in the studio with the computer on and the heater on and noise in the background. I've turned all of that off now so we can get a better comparison of the noise, at least, between these two recorders. And this is the Sony PCMD50 recorder. The microphones are pointing at 90 degrees. Now, these mics differ in that when they are pointing at 90 degrees, they are exactly pointing toward each other, and they don't twist like a screw. They actually physically move from pointing toward each other to pointing out toward the side. So when they are at 120 degrees, they are further apart than they are now, and further apart than the microphones on the Zoom H4N. Purists, I think, have a problem with this because now the sound you get is not mono-compatible, not that every sound needs to be, but I have noticed that there is some bit of a hole in the middle of the sound when the microphones are pulled completely out to the side at 120 degrees. But these are the mics of the Sony PCMD50. All right, three different recorders, three different sounds. Let's do the same thing. That is to say, let's use the same three recorders and play a little music through my speakers. Little Beatles for you, Abbey Road, at least a part of it. And first the Eddyroll, then the Zoom H4, and then the Sony PCMD50. You'll have to see if you can tell where they switch because I don't stop the recording. I don't know that you'll notice. Well, I'm not going to tell you what you should notice. Just see what you think. Music with Eddyroll, Zoom, and Sony.
Joe was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine.
Well now, I think if you have a good set of speakers, you can certainly tell the difference between the Eddyroll and any of the other recorders. The Eddyroll just doesn't have the same stereo spread as the other two because it uses omnidirectional microphones and they're very close together. I actually had the bass off on the Eddyroll because with it on, it is way more bassy than the Zoom or the Sony. And I'm not sure which is more accurate, but at least this way they're more alike. And the last test I want to do before we go on to something else is another internal microphone test. This, I think, might give you a better understanding of the difference between the sound of these microphones, between the Zoom H4 and the Sony PCMD50, as well as the stereo spread. some rain I recorded recently, having both recorders recording at the same time. So what I'm going to do is start with the Zoom and play maybe 10 seconds of rain. Then I'm going to switch to the Sony and play the same 10 seconds, then back to the Zoom for the next 10, and then the Sony for the same 10, etc., etc. And, well, what is it you think you hear, and which do you like? Rain. And now one more test of the stereo spread of the Zoom H4n in comparison with the Edirol R09HR. A car going by down my street, first recorded on the Edirol and then on the Zoom H4n. See what you think. And now a recording using the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone on first the Sony PCM-D50, then the Zoom H4n, and then the Edirol R09HR. This is the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone. It's not the quietest microphone in the world, but it's about a $300 microphone and sort of average. I want to start out by using this microphone on three recorders. First, the Sony PCM-D50, which is what I'm doing now, then the Zoom, and then the Edirol. And then we'll do some other tests. So this is the Sony PCM-D50 using the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone. Now the same microphone on the Zoom H4n. And this is the Zoom H4n, the new recorder, with the Audio-Technica AT-822 in the bedroom. I'm recording once again into the jack that's on the back of the recorder, the 1/8 inch mini jack. I can hear microphone noise, but of course you always can in a quiet room. The question is, how much different is it than the Sony? This is the Zoom H4n, and this ends this test. And this is the Audio-Technica AT-822 on the Edirol recorder. Same room, same distance from the mic. In that the Zoom is a little noisier than the Sony, and so is the Edirol, I thought it would be interesting to compare the Edirol and the Zoom. I can't tell now, but I wouldn't be surprised if they are pretty close. I guess the only way we'll find out is to go back and put this on the end of the file after the Zoom test and see. So this is the Audio-Technica AT-822 and the Edirol R09HR. This is the end of this test. If there is one weakness this recorder has, it is being used with low-powered dynamic microphones. I want to play you a test of the Electrovoice RE635, a very low-powered dynamic microphone, first recorded on the Sony PCM-D50, then the Edirol R09HR, and then the Zoom H4N, and see what you think. And this is the Electrovoice microphone. It's the RE635, I believe. And you do hear some hum because my cable has a bit of a problem, but the cable is certainly not affecting the noise of the mic preamplifiers. Let's just listen to noise. This is being recorded on the Sony PCM-D50. Now I'm going to put the same microphone on the Edirol R09 and see how that sounds relative to this recorder, the RE635 on the Edirol. This is the RE635 on the Edirol R09 recorder. A bit more noisy, but certainly not bad. It's getting to the point where, depending on your needs, it might be questionable, but it's a very low-powered mic, and it's probably as bad as it's ever going to get on the Edirol, because this is about as lower-powered a mic as you can get. Now, what about the Zoom H4N? Same mic. And this is the Electrovoice 635 on the Zoom H4N recorder. And as you, I have not heard these comparisons yet until I go back and put them in a row. So we're all listening together. I'm going into the jack on the back of the recorder, but this recorder also has jacks on the bottom. And this recorder will take an XLR plug. So let's go into the XLR input on the bottom of the recorder and see if there's any difference. And that's exactly what I've done. So now let me go back and put all these in a row, listen to them, and see what we can come up with. This is the RE635 going into the Zoom H4N, into the XLR jack on the bottom of the recorder. Now I'm recording on the Zoom H4N recorder, using phantom power, into the Rode NT1A microphone. The bass is not rolled off, so it's flat response. And let's listen to noise for a second and see how much we get. Now, what I'm going to do is something totally strange. I'm going to plug this microphone into my Sound Devices 744T recorder, which is the recorder I use to record my CDs, my music performances, voiceovers, concerts, etc., a very professional recorder, and see if there's any significant difference between what the Zoom H4N gives us and what the Sound Devices 744T gives us. This is the Zoom H4N, and that is my stomach growling. Oh well, it's time for breakfast. And now, to the Sound Devices 744T. And that's exactly what I have done. This is the same microphone, the Rode NT1A, going into the Sound Devices recorder, flat response, same distance from the mic, and my stomach's talking again. That's what happens when you haven't eaten and you want to record something, I guess. So this is just a test to see how the phantom power works on the Zoom H4N. We know it works well on this recorder. It's as good as you can get, just about. And you're listening to this at the same time I am, and comparing the two. Let's listen to noise. The hum you're hearing is my computer battery backup, which I forgot to turn off, but it wasn't off during the other recording either, so they should be similar. Anyway, this ends this test. Well, I think we've played with enough microphones at this point that gives you some idea of what is going on with this recorder. There are some things that I haven't mentioned that I really like about this recorder. Lots of them. One of them is pre-record. There is a place in the menu where you can say, I want you to record in the buffer when I'm in record standby, and when I press record, I want you to play the last 2 seconds of what I heard before I pressed record, which is what the Sony PCMD50 has as well. And that's nice because if you are in record standby and you hear something and you haven't pressed record and you think, oh my gosh, I missed it, well, guess what? You haven't. It's there. That is, if you press record within 2 seconds. This is the same recorder, the Zoom H4N, but I have the bass frequencies rolled off at 80 Hz, which is the first bass roll-off position of many. And when you look in the menus that we send out, you'll see just how many they are. This is actually the lowest bass roll-off that you can get, or the highest, depending on which way you look at it. In other words, this is the most you can get, and it is noticeable. But now we go back to flat bass response and see what that sounds like. And now I am back to flat response, using the internal microphones of this recorder, and I've got to be a little more careful about blowing into it. But anyway, this gives you a small sample, just with speech obviously, of what this recorder sounds like on various bass roll-off frequency curves. The recorder does come with a windscreen. It's a foam windscreen, and it does fit very snugly on the recorder, which is nice. What's also interesting is that the Sony windscreen, the windscreen that comes with the Sony PCMD50, and actually, let me correct that, the windscreen that doesn't come with the Sony PCMD50 and costs you about $50 to buy, which is that furry animal-looking thing, which really does a good job, also fits on this recorder. There's also a multi-track mode available. I'm even less sure what that does. There's a project mode in which you can have all kinds of graphic faders and whatever. I do know that you can do MS recording. One of the menu items is MS, or mid-side. And you can actually use two external microphones, one figure eight and one cardioid or omni or wide cardioid, to actually do MS recording and mix the channels as you would want to do in that kind of setup. I haven't played much with USB. I know that it can be a storage device for copying files onto your computer. It can also serve as a sound card and thus can be used as a microphone into your computer. Whether you can use it in four-track manner in this way, I don't know. I do know that there's a whole separate menu of things you can do in USB microphone mode that allows you to do bass roll-off and all kinds of limiter selections and various other things. But I really haven't played with that all that much. Like the Sony PCMD50, and I believe you can do this on the Eduroll as well, you can either have the files numbered or you can have them according to date with a date-numbered file name. And obviously there are a lot more things you can do with this recorder, which I have not had the time to mention. It's a very nice unit, and it is indeed quite flexible. There are actually guitar preamps on this recorder. I believe there are even equalizers. There's a metronome. I think you can even punch in two tracks in either four-track mode or multi-track mode, but I don't know that that's true, and I certainly don't know how to do it. In other words, there's a lot of stuff this recorder does, and a lot of stuff I don't even know about. There are a number of other things I like about this recorder as well. And by the way, I'm using a different microphone. This is the Altec Lansing 302, a combination headphone-microphone set. So these also can be used with this recorder. Simply plug the headphone plug into the headphone jack, and the microphone plug into the microphone jack, and away you go. The Phantom Power supply on this recorder is really nice in that it is operable in either 48 or 24 volts. So if you have a microphone like the Rode NT1A, which will work in 24 volts, you really save a lot of battery power that way because it doesn't draw as much current. I also like the fact that the internal and external volume controls are different. Actually, you're using the same volume control. But when you plug a microphone into the plugs on the bottom, You set a level, and that level remains the same when you switch to the internal microphones by that column of buttons on the face on the left. You now set a volume for the internal microphone, and when you go back and forth, the volumes are exactly what you set in each situation. The only difference is that the jack on the back of the recorder, the mini jack, is pegged to the internal microphones, so its volume gets adjusted when you adjust the volume when you're using internal microphones or that jack. Otherwise, the plugs on the bottom will keep their volume setting when you change to them. There are, however, now that we've changed microphones again, this is another over-the-head headset microphone combination. When I compare this to the Eddyroll recorder in terms of accessibility, it's certainly accessible. It is not as accessible. First of all, the menus on the Eddyroll don't wrap. They do on the Zoom. However, if you hold in the menu button for 2 seconds, you come back to the top of the menu you are currently in. So in other words, if you're in input, you go out of input by holding down the menu key for a couple seconds. When you go back into input, you are not where you left off, but you're at the top of the input menu. If you want to be at the top of all menus, you simply turn the recorder off and on again, and there you are. This is how it works in a lot of recorders, actually. But the menus do wrap, and while that is difficult in some settings, it is easier in others. When we talked about deleting files by using the short key buttons, you didn't have to arrow all the way down through the menu list. You could arrow up twice and you were on file. So it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. The pause button works, except it's a toggle. It is not a toggle on the Eddyroll. It can be, but for example, on this recorder, you press play when you're in record, and that pauses, and you press play again, and you stop. Well, okay, what if I forget where I am? The only way you can deal with that is to start the file all over again, because there's no way you can know whether you're in pause or record unless you can see it counting. On the Eddyroll, if you press the play button to pause, I believe you can press it again to get out of pause, but you can also press record to get out of pause. And you can press record as many times as you want, and nothing happens. So the easy way to get out of pause is always an assured way, and that is to press the record button, and if you're not sure where you are, you press the record button again, and you know you're recording. Also, relative to the Eddyroll and this recorder, the Eddyroll has far more switches on the back of the recorder, which allow you to do things that you have to do in the menus on this recorder. I'm not going to go through all the buttons on the Eddyroll because there's a podcast on that. But for example, you can turn on and off the plug-in power, which saves batteries. You can turn on and off limiter. You can turn on and off low cut. Yes, you do have to set what low cut you're using in the menus, but once you've done that, you can use a switch on the back of the recorder to turn that on and off. On this recorder, to change any of those settings, you have to go into the menus. And here's where the Zoom H4, even though it had some real accessibility problems, is one step ahead of the Zoom H4N, in that you can go into Record Standby on both these recorders and set some menu parameters. On the Zoom H4, however, you can hear the menu choices. That is to say, if you're setting limiter, you can hear the limiter change as you arrow past it. You only press OK when you know that's the one you want. They also have something called mic modeling on the H4. And you can hear the difference in these mics as you jog wheel by them, and you press enter when you want them. On the Zoom H2 and the Zoom H4, that is not the case. In order to hear it change, you have to press in the jog dial. Well, that's okay if you're in the place you want to be, but since you have no audible clue that you are, you could be in a place you didn't want to be, and who knows what you've changed. Now, it is true that on most recorders, unless you do a lot of different kind of stuff, you can leave the menus alone, and you really don't have to visit them all that often. But it is easier on the Eddyroll, both in terms of the menu structure not wrapping and in terms of the switches on the back, to actually gain a good deal more accessibility than any other recorder I've seen, actually, other than the ones that speak, like the Olympus series and the Plextalk. So that obviously makes it somewhat more accessible, but I still think that the Edirol, with all its switches on the back, really makes it even easier, in some situations, than menus that speak. I mentioned pressing the play button on this recorder and other buttons on this recorder. They do have a distinct click when you press them, unlike the Zoom H4, which you didn't even know sometimes whether you'd press the record button. And that's nice. It's a very firm feeling. It moves. You can hear it click. The downside is that when you're recording with the internal microphones and you press pause, you hear the button click. If, of course, you're using external microphones, that's not an issue. It's hard to make a choice sometimes between accessibility and other things about a recorder you might want, like microphones that change from 90 to 120 degrees, or microphones that are cardioid, or four-track, or any number of other things which may cause you to purchase a recorder that is less accessible. So it ultimately comes down to personal choice and how much time you may want to spend dealing with issues that might be not quite as accessible as you'd like them to be. One of the things I don't like about this recorder is its limiters and compressors. I have only found one of the 7 or 8 possibilities that one has that really work, and that is the general 1 limiter. The compressors work in that they do what they're supposed to do, although they sound like they're doing it. They raise the floor, knock off the top, and you can hear every ounce of their doing it. The limiters just plain distort for the most part. The only one that doesn't is the one I'm using now, and I've really not gotten high enough to have it do anything, so I suppose I could try to figure out how to test that or how to show you something. Aha! As it happens, my friends in Finland, I have not done my usual test, have I? Neil's favorite garbage disposal. Well, that didn't work all that well because you really couldn't hear it being knocked down all that much. If I blow into this microphone, you can hear it. You don't have any control over how long it stays down. That is what I would assume the various limiters would do for you, except they don't seem to do that. It certainly can be dealt with. You don't have to use the limiter. You can go low enough. I didn't ask you anything.
Sorry, I didn't recognize your command.
That's because I didn't ask you to talk. This is the silly clock that I got that supposedly is voice activated, but it activates...
Shut up.
Where was I, nitwit clock? One of the things I do like about this recorder is that you don't have to use the limiter. And even if you do, you can record so low that it really is probably not going to come into play. The noise floor on this recorder at 44.1 16-bit is minus 90 dB with no sound going into the recorder. That's pretty doggone low. So you can record quite low without really picking up much, if any, floor noise that gets added to your recordings. So while the limiters don't work all that well, they certainly aren't needed all that much. And now I'm in 4-track mode. Yes, friends, this really works. Well, I haven't really experimented that much with 4-track mode, but here's what I do know. One of the choices in the menu is, believe it or not, 4-track. If you select this choice, you can record at the same time with both the internal microphones and the external microphones, and that's exactly what I'm doing. Well, that's not quite what I'm doing. I'm doing something even weirder. I'm inside with the internal microphones. The Sony PCMD50 is sitting out on my front porch, and it's going into mics 3 and 4, into the XLR inputs on the bottom of the recorder. So I'm recording both at the same time. Speaking of menus, I haven't really talked about them that much. One of the reasons is that would take a whole different podcast. So what my friend Tom and I have decided to do, mostly, to his credit, prepare a file that not only talks about the layout of the recorder, the shortcut keys, and also goes into detail about the menus. The file isn't finished. We keep finding things in the menus we didn't know about. We have our sighted friends help us, but they're not always around, and so we have really sort of diligently worked to try to pull these menus together. The manual, well, let's not even go there. It's so bad that they're going to have to redo it, according to Zoom. So it's really kind of hard to learn anything from that. Anyway, rather than going through the menus here, I'm hoping that the file containing the menus will get added to the podcast site so that you can click on the link and download it. If not, and even so, I will have it on my FTP site, which is ftp://ftp.ravenswood.org. And Ravenswood is ravenswood.org. It's an incomplete file. We will keep adding to it. And if you own one of these recorders and discover something that we don't have there, let us know. And who knows, I may make a different podcast or put up some other files using other microphones and talking about other kinds of things about this recorder, especially if I learn more about the four-track mode. By the way, when you're in four-track mode, your files go into a different folder than they do when they're in stereo, and you get two files for each recording, one for the internal mics and one for the external mics. And I'm sure there's some way that you can balance them and combine them and change the volume of them on the unit itself, which would largely, I suspect, be inaccessible. But what I did is simply layer one over top of the other one in SoundForge, and that works. Well, I think that's all I need to do at this point. I'm sure I've left out a lot of things you'd like to know about. And, as I said, I might do some more work if I find out more information. But as for now, this is Neil Ewers signing off, saying I hope you've enjoyed this podcast on the Zoom H4N. And I hope you have a nice day, a nice week. Spring is coming here very slowly. Very slowly. But it will come. Thanks for listening.